and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for December 2nd. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and back from his much-deserved vacation is my buddy Jim Allen. Man, it's so good to have you back, man.
It is. It was good to see you last night. Thanks for coming over.
Thank you very much for the party. Thanksgiving and everything.
Much deserved. I don't think there's any justice in vacations. People get them when they don't deserve them, and people, you know, don't get them when they do. So, deserved or not, it was a blast, and good to be back.
Missed you last time, solo act. I was scared to fly, man. I had fear of flying.
Wow.
But I got through it. I got through it without you.
Okay.
Somehow.
Okay, Erica. Dijon. Okay.
But I got through it, and it's good to have you back. On this week's show, we're going to talk about the MVPs, the top rookies, and touch on some other topics. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, well, there was no surprise in the Pacific League in terms of the MVP, and there was a little bit of a surprise in the Central League. Let's talk about Masahiro
Tanaka. Let's talk about the surprises and non-surprises.
Okay. Let's talk about Masahiro Tanaka of the Tohoku Rakuten Eagles, and he got the MVP, and it's no surprise there. In fact, it was a surprise that anybody would vote for a second place and a third place. What's the point? Just put Tanaka down in first place and hand in your ballot.
I think you have to.
I don't think there's a rule that you have to.
I don't remember saying you had to. I mean, I don't remember the instructions, and they're long ago in the rubbish, so I can't say that. But I mean, it comes with equally mindless instructions, such as you cannot vote for somebody. You cannot skip a position in the best nine, or your entire ballot for the best nine will be invalid. You know, rules like that. Like, I guess somebody has to be best, even if they're substandard.
Yeah, it didn't say that they're the greatest player. It just said they're the best of the players available.
Okay, fair enough.
And so of those guys, yeah, you got your best nine. So, yeah, I think Tanaka could fill a house with all the hardware he's collected this year for awards. I saw a list in the Hochi Shimbun that just went from top. I mean, they made it kind of big, but it went from top to bottom. And, you know, he's won awards for best shoe tire and everything for this
indeed
season.
Well, you know, watch out for them tying shoes, baby. John's going, don't tie your shoes. He's like at the movies.
Yeah. Maku's better at it. Let him do your shoes, man. So, I was even surprised, though, that five other Eagles got MVP votes, whether it was second place or third place. They were on the ballot. You know, Casey McGee got some votes. Andrew Jones got some votes, the catcher.
Casey led the Pacific League in second place votes.
Yeah, so.
Which is, I think, good.
Yeah. So I don't think there was any surprise with it. He ran away with it. It was a unanimous choice. And I don't think there was any surprise.
Who did you give, obviously, you did vote, correct?
Yes, I did vote.
Okay, who did you give your second and third place votes to? Since we're talking about the rest of the crowd.
Casey McGee was my second place vote. It was not Yuya Hasegawa. Who was it?
Me neither.
Asamura from the Lions.
Yeah. Yeah, I had Asamura second, and I don't remember if I had Asamura second or Casey third, but one of that combination. So, okay. So that was it. Anyway, Yuya Hasegawa just beat out, Casey McGee for second, but it was pretty close. And after that, it was just kind of a smorgasbord of people you have to name. Throw Asamura in there, finished fifth.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought, you know, he had a really productive year, but he was really steady. And again, he was really important for that team. So
sure,
that was what impressed me. And then, you know, moving past the obvious in Tanaka, that was a no-brainer. We go to the Central League, and Coco Ballantyne, Vladimir Ballantyne of the last place Swallows wins the award. And I voted for him, but I mean, I'm surprised that enough people did to make him the winner. I was kind of shocked.
I'm not surprised. And I didn't vote for him, but I'm not surprised.
Okay. Why not?
I'm not surprised because MVP voters are swayed by amazing numbers.
Yeah, but again, it is a team that didn't really do very much. Now, granted.
My words exactly. I mean, I don't put that, you know, I don't hold it against him that the team didn't do very much.
Certainly I didn't, and I remember saying, I remember saying distinctly during our conversation, our debate, that if someone does something highly unusual, highly remarkable, then that's a value. And I think he brought value in that he had a lot of people interested in Swallows games outside the country. He brought a lot of attention to Japanese baseball. I think he should have gotten the Shoreiki Award.
Excuse me. Then you give him the Shoreiki Award.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
The greatest contribution to Japanese baseball.
And he definitely was the greatest contributor to the game. Well, I mean, this whole year is going to be remembered by these two guys, and we're going to get into this later because I want to ask you the question, but Tanaka, Ma-kun, you know, having a perfect regular season in terms of decisions, and then Ballantyne breaking the home run record. But yeah, he brought a lot of international attention. A lot of people who knew him when he played in the States, a lot of writers were writing about him.
Sure.
And that was huge. That was big.
That was huge. And again, my point is, if you really, really look, okay, part of the thing there's so many things I want to talk about here, but essentially, yeah, to go back to the point, it's essentially the Miguel Cabrera argument. Well, his numbers are so amazing. I think people, a lot of people actually believed he was the best player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Best player.
I asked a number of reporters last year when Shinosuke Abe had his second superb season and went from getting 5 points and one first place vote in the MVP balloting to being the clear runaway the runaway winner last year when his two seasons were not that different. I asked a bunch of reporters and they said, well, can you vote for somebody who's not on a championship team? And they said, no, not unless he does something really amazing. He sets a record or, you know, he wins 20 games or, you know, he does this something that's really amazing. Then we have an excuse to vote for the guy we think is better.
Right.
Because he did something amazing.
Better.
He wins a triple crown, you can vote for him. But, okay, anyway, so there's that point. You need an excuse to vote for somebody. Now, they found the excuse because he set up the home run record. Well, you know, great. And he had a great year. And I'll just give you my very brief analysis. He was far and away the best hitter. Well, I won't say he was far and away the best hitter, but he was easily the most valuable hitter in NPB last year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Easily.
Easily.
No one's going to.
However, he has essentially zero defensive value last year. He's a mediocre outfielder. He's got a good arm. He's got a decent arm for right field. He makes some plays. He makes some bonehead plays in right field. It's not his strong suit. He doesn't get a lot of value out of being an outfielder.
Right.
Okay. Now we have a couple of guys. Okay. And that's one thing. His value, I'd say 95% of his value is with his bat. That's what sets him apart from the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now the next part of the Coco Ballantyne equation, and this is to take nothing away from him. I mean, what a superb season. But his home runs are less valuable than everybody else's home runs.
Because?
And they're less valuable, not because he plays for a last place team, but he plays in a park where home runs are easy to hit. That makes, you know, it's inflation. I'm not saying... we had this discussion before, and this year he had a kind of an unusual year. His first two seasons, he hit essentially the same number of home runs in his home games and road games. This year he hit two-thirds of his home runs at Jingu. Now, I'm not saying Jingu caused the home runs, but I'm saying the value of those home runs is less.
I see where you're going, yeah.
It's inflation, basically.
Yeah.
And the same goes for Tony Blanco. And this goes for the Giants players, although the Tokyo Dome is not as an extreme a home run park. It's a decent home run park, but not as extreme as Jingu is now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But that being the case, the value of all those home runs is not as big. So while he hit 60 in a short period of time, the fact that he misses 13 games doesn't help, or 14 or 15 games, doesn't help his case. It makes his home run total look more amazing. But those being out of those 15 games, you know, didn't help the Swallows.
Mm.
It didn't keep him in the game. So that hurt. That's a mark against him, not for him. And again, I have to go back to the defense. Then let's take the second best hitter in the Central League this year, Shinosuke Abe.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the best defensive catcher in the Central League on a championship team, and he's my MVP.
Yeah, and you know, I was looking at his numbers, and they're really good. And the problem with, and this is just going to be a problem for him because he's a great player. And a lot of times we take these great players, take them for granted. But he is a catcher that's not going to change. He did bat cleanup, that might change. And he is very productive. That's probably not going to change, or it hasn't changed. He's been steady. But we can't, you know, it's just the people are not going to say, well, he's the catcher and he's batting cleanup. He's got to be the MVP. They're not going to vote for him every year.
Well, he didn't. His season wasn't quite as good as his season was last year.
No, but it was comparable.
But, yeah. But here's the thing is that very common thing to happen in MVP voting is for a player to have a better year than he did as an MVP. And for somebody else to win the award. This happened early in the 90s. Jack Howell and Atsuya Furuta were MVPs. Now, I don't remember which was which, but they had Furuta's better. It was 1992 and 1993 when the Swallows, of course, won the Central League.
Mm-hmm.
One of them had their best season. Each player had his best season when the other one won the MVP. the guy who was actually the best player finished second in the MVP ballot both times.
Yeah.
So anyway, that kind of happens. And I think that worked against him. And of course he finished third in the balloting, which is, I think, is a joke because basically, people looked at what Shuichi Murata had had a wonderful second half. You know, from July, he was the more valuable of the two players. The problem was he was useless. April, May, and June.
Yeah, you said that before. I don't know how much useless he was, but here's a couple of things. One quick point I wanted to make on Abe is that.
But Abe was better. His first half was better than Murata's second half.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
Okay, well, Abe controls the games. He calls the pitches. He leads the pitchers young and old. Again, he hit cleanup. I mean, he's an MVP candidate every year if he just hits 250 with half the home runs and RBIs he's got just because of the nature of the position. And we just can't block out all the other guys because they play a less significant or a lesser role on the defensive side. And that's what I think people are looking at too. They, you know, Abe is he's a great player and he could be, like I said, an MVP every year, but are they going to vote for him every year? No.
Yeah,
and
I agree with you. That hurts him. And this is the third, I wasn't allowed to vote last year, but I would have voted for him. And I would have gone with the flow, but this is the third year that Abe would have been number one on my ballot.
Right. And so I think, again, had Coco not gone crazy with the home runs and not broken the record, I'd have to say Murata, who was second in the voting, probably would have gotten the MVP.
Probably.
Based on the fact that I looked this up on the site that I told you about earlier this year, which was Let's Enjoy Baseball Data. And on that page, it said that Murata had 44 hits and 140 chances with runners in scoring position, and Abe had 32 hits and 112 opportunities with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, well, that hurts. I mean, that's something you have to take into account.
And I think that was it. I think, you know, he produced a lot. He produced with a lot with guys on base, and his RBIs were really valuable. I think Murata was on the way to winning. And like I said, I was impressed with his defense from since the time he's come to the Giants. I guess, you know, you said he put in the hard work.
I think you were impressed in the second half. His first half was, again, he's been a kind of a last year.
Defensively?
The first half of the season was, and the second half defensively, he was a different player late in the season. And he carried so much of that over to this year.
All right. Well, I'm talking about.
And he had no offense last year, and this year his offense picked up in the second half. So he's really right now the player the Bay Stars thought he was going to be, you know, the complete offensive and defensive package.
Can we have him back now?
Yeah, well, he's the guy the Giants thought I don't think the Giants thought he would be this good, to be honest.
Yeah, they're like
if they got the Murata at the beginning of this season, or I should say, if they got the offense and half the defense, I think they'd be happy. because they, you know, they didn't buy him because he's a good fielder. They got him because he could hit home runs.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'm thinking, you know, Yokohama really wants to get him back now that the Giants have fixed him defensively. They really like to get him back in that park.
That's right. Hey, we got, hold on, we just checked the warranty.
Right, we sent him out for repairs.
The warranty, yes.
We sent him out for repairs. We threw him away, you know. We threw him on the scrap heap because we thought it was broken. Now that you fixed him, we'll pay you. Can we have him back now?
No, they didn't throw him on the scrap heap.
No, they didn't. He left.
So I saw a crack, and he ran through it. I want to make a couple of points. Jason Koskrie had a very nice column saying that Coco Ballantyne was the deserving MVP winner, and you know, he has his right to that opinion, and I disagree, but within that column, he had made a number of interesting points, and I think I want to take two of them and give him credit for these because I really liked them.
Mm-hmm.
Not that anything I like is necessarily credit worthy, but points which I think we should.
It's so good to have you back.
I know, isn't it? I love being here.
Smack, okay. Smack, but here you're up on a pedestal, but smack. All right, go ahead.
Anyway, two points I thought were very astute. One was that I think the Ballantyne selection was important in the sense that it sort of. It may have opened the door for people in the Central League to win on other teams because I think if he doesn't break the record, he's got zero chance. He would have finished third or fourth or fifth or something. And that's one point.
Okay.
Although, the next point is that he mentioned that Tony Blanco got zero. You know, here was the guy who was the third best hitter in the Central League.
Oh, man. Did you see? I kept looking at all those numbers, and his name kept coming up on just about everything. But go ahead.
Sure. I can't say he is the third best, but, you know, in my best estimates, you know, he's in that area. He's a little bit behind Abe. He's on about par with Murata. You know, again, he's playing in a home run friendly park, a batting average friendly park, and he finally became a batting average friendly, you know, he finally became a batting average friendly batter. So he got zero first place votes. I'm thinking, geez, if Coco, you know, if you just looked at, you know, I know they're trying to pick the best guy, but geez, somebody must have thought that season was worth something, and they didn't even finish last.
Yeah.
So, but I thought that was a good point was that he, you know, he was completely missed. The difference, you know, 200 first place votes to zero.
Right.
But again, your point about the best nine voting is that we were talking about earlier is, you know, they got to pick somebody regardless. You know, you got to pick an MVP regardless of the field. Some seasons there are more candidates than others. And of course, the guy who got my second place vote in the Central League
mm-hmm.
was, Takashi Toritani.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
who had a for two reasons. One, he just had a kind of a typical year for him, in which he, you know, he draws 110 walks, and but he had on top of that, it wasn't a historic season, but he had probably the best season in Japan at shortstop on dirt. The other guy who had a season like that was Takahiro Ikeyama. In both cases, they were kind of unusual seasons. They were not norms.
Right.
It was a season that is, I mean, Hirokazu Ibata had seasons that were kind of similar. And what I mean is he had, I think, turned 94 double plays with not enough errors to count on one hand.
Yeah.
Ibata had kind of like those seasons, but it's harder to do that when you're playing with the Dragons and you don't have that many runners on first base anyway. So it's hard to get the high DP totals. But anyway, he had that amazing season. He had his tremendous offense in a very tough park for hitters. And I gave him the number two vote. And, if I just look at Toritani, oh, wait, that's the only vote he got was my number two vote.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Two votes I've got. Given two people their only votes. Okay.
Getting back to Blanco, I did a blog post for One World Sports right after the season, and I said, you know, we've talked about Coco Ballantyne and him going for the Triple Crown, but obviously Blanco started out hitting all those home runs, and we
sure.
I started talking about T60. Had he been able to hold on in that race a little bit at all, I think he would have gotten the recognition. But he ended up winning two of the crowns, and people forget about that because they thought, well, it's a given that that Coco's going to win the home run and probably the RBI title, but he didn't win.
Well, he was leading in the batting title
for a long time.
He never was leading in RBIs, Coco was.
But, right. Okay. But he got close,
and then he got hamstring trouble.
Right. So I wrote immediately after the season ended, I said, you know, Tony Blanco's great season got destroyed by these two guys, Tanaka mm-hmm. and Coco Ballantyne, because of what they did. But, you know, you start looking at the numbers, and I think, yeah, this is another guy on this site, on the Let's Enjoy Baseball Data site. He led the league, the Central League, with 56 hits with runners in scoring position. I mean, he was, and his OPS, I think, was second behind Ballantyne, and mm-hmm. his slugging was up there. I mean, he was amazing. He had a great season, and it's just all hidden away. So it was a good point by Jason. I think it was astute, but you know, you got to give me some credit too. I mentioned it right after the season was over.
I haven't forgotten you. We've been talking about this whole year about Tony Blanco, and right, you're right on, is that the most lasting spillage did this year was give Tony Blanco that nickname, T60. He didn't do much else before he got hurt. Yeah, it was, he earned a lot of credit for that. But again, here's the thing. His numbers, you know, if he has a triple crown, then he's the MVP. Regardless of, I don't know that in Japan, because people in the past have won triple crowns. Jason pointed out Bass won one, but the Tigers, you know, finished third or something in 1986.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's all part of the picture. But who knows right now? Who knows? We don't know. Is this a game changer or is it not a game changer? It's obvious. It's too early to tell.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Hopefully, you know, if people think he's the best player, stop making excuses for voting for somebody else is what I would say. But
since you brought this up, I want to know, if you had to choose now one guy to remember this year by, who would you choose? Would you choose Malkoon or Coco Ballantyne?
Wow.
You only get one.
I can't pick Josuke Kikuchi.
I'm not even going to dignify that, and I'm going to say, answer my question.
Poor guy got messed out of the best nine by Tsuyoshi Nishioka. Boy, pick those two guys. Which one you'd rather have on your team? I want to see those writers start making teams.
Kikuchi had a great year for the Carp. He's not in this conversation.
Right. Okay. Anyway, moving along. Which one, which one? I would say Masahiro Tanaka. I mean, they were both amazing, amazing seasons, but I'd say Masahiro Tanaka because, you know, just going perfect is so weird.
Mm.
Hitting 60 home runs, you know, it's like if he had hit 58 or 50, you know, if he had hit 58 or 56 or 61, it wouldn't have made a bit of difference, really.
Mm.
But the difference between 24 and, you know, 24 and 0 and 24 and 1 or 23 and 1 is just, it's a perceptual thing. You know, it's the Miami Dolphins. I'm going to actually make an American football reference. Miami Dolphins going 17 and 0. I think somebody else went perfect, or no, nobody else has gone perfect, but, cause they made the season longer in the NFL. But, you know, that perfect season thing is so amazing. And then of course winning the Japan series, if we, you know, we extend it, then, and suffering his first defeat in the Japan series, which was just dramatic, but, nothing to do with perfection, but it's such an amazing feat that, that would be my choice.
I'm taking Coco, and I'm taking him for, well, maybe a couple reasons, but let me preface this by saying, I think we're splitting hairs with this. I know I'm doing that with the question because both players.
You can split hairs, Ben.
I can do it. Okay.
If you got them, split them.
All right. Well, both these players did something unprecedented. Both guys did something that had never been done in Tanaka's case anywhere. But the thing for me that separates them is that Ma Kun he needed his teammates to come through for him to get his record. I mean, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. He's got the offense, he got the defense. He's got to have guys making plays behind him. He's got to have guys hitting, and they did. They did come through for him in a number of ways. But Coco has to do this all by himself. And he hit such a beautiful, this is the other reason, he hit such a beautiful figure. He hit 60. It's so easy to remember. It's not some arbitrary number. It's not 59. It's not, you know, 73 or whatever. It's 60 on the button. And
it sounded like he wanted to stop after he got to 60. wait. Perfection. I'm perfect. Leave me alone. Send me home, babe.
I think he said, you know, that's a good figure. That's enough. Yeah, that's enough. I want to go for 61 next year.
I don't want to be greedy.
But, yeah, I mean, he just has to make contact and he had to do it. All the pressure was all on him. Plus he had a situation where his team wasn't doing well. So, he was the main attraction. I mean, people came to the games to see him hit home runs. I mean, they didn't come there to see him hit the ball to the warning track or get a single. It was almost, and this is the feeling I got when we were at some of those games when he was chasing after number 56, that people said, you know, even if he knocked in a run with a double or a single, it was kind of disappointing. It was deflating. But if he got a ball high in the air and it was an out, that was more exciting. But I think he changed the game. I mean, it just was. It just was because he was chasing the record.
I think that's a valid argument. I think we're basically talking, we're not splitting hairs, but we're sort of talking on, you know, which dimension is more interesting.
Hmm.
But no, I like your thinking, on that subject. And I think with Tanaka, of course, it became that too, because he had to win. Now pitchers really, to be honest, they don't win games so much as they lose them. You know, when you're a pitcher, basically it's really easy to lose a game.
Mm.
It's amazingly easy to lose.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It's amazingly easy because you're the one who can really lose it. More than anybody else on the field, you're the one who can lose the game. The fact that he didn't, you know, although early in the year when he was pitching lousy, he pitched lousy at the beginning of the season. I mean, there's not a lot about it. I mean, he was lousy.
I was going to say, man, there's a lot of guys out there in MPB who would like to pitch that lousy. I think they'd be making more money this year.
Right. Well, let's put it this way. He wasn't the monthly MVP the entire season.
Yes.
He was not the monthly MVP in April when his ERA was not that attractive.
He had a couple three issues early on, but still he kept his team in games enough to win.
Well, right. After that, I mean, he was okay. You know, he was pretty good. He probably was the third or fourth best pitcher in Japan in April, or maybe the fifth best pitcher in Japan in April. But after that, there really wasn't any doubt about who was the best. It wasn't like a puzzle. So yes, I think that the other thing about being perfect is, again, I go back to the 50, 59, 60, 61. You know, it's nice that he hit a round number. Okay. Well, he also, Coco could do that while hitting 220 against the pitchers who were the top 10 in ERA in both leagues.
Right.
He didn't hit them very well, but you could do that. You can strike out today and hit a home run tomorrow. You lose a game, you can't get it back.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, you know, we're looking at these two, but I think it's a great question.
Thank you.
It's thought provoking, and you know, if you can provoke a thought out of me sometimes, that's a good job.
Okay. And here, keep this in mind too, that I think in Japan, I think Makun, everybody's going to say it's Makun's year. I think outside Japan, a lot of people are going to say it was the year of Coco Ballantyne. So I think it's just a lot of its perspective.
I would disagree. I would disagree because outside of Japan, what people care about is who's coming to the major leagues.
Yeah, but
who's coming to the major leagues? Yeah, Tanaka. Who's Tanaka?
Home runs. They like home runs too. So I just think Coco Ballantyne is a name and that's easy to remember and easier to say than Masahiro.
Okay, good point. Well done. Well done.
All right, let's talk about the top rookies real quick.
What were your thoughts or surprises on Takahiro Norimoto of the Rakuten Eagles? Anyway, he was the Pacific League Rookie of the Year. And Yasuhiro Ryan Ogawa in the Central League won the of the Yakult Swallows won the Central League Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, my impressions were the voters like wins. And I think I talked about it before. I'm sure I've talked about it before on the show that winning is important. And Ogawa got 16 of them.
Hold on, let me write that down.
Winning is important. This is provocative too, right?
I'm being some.
I know you are, but wins are important, and
sure.
And it doesn't matter sometimes how you get to them as long as you get them. And that was my first impression.
Well said.
Yeah. Yeah, Norimoto had a lot of wins. He had a stretch there where he struggled a little bit, but I thought he was a hands-down Rookie of the Year. He certainly made a big impression later in the season and into the playoffs when they don't really count for the vote. But
right.
As far as Ogawa, I was kind of surprised because I thought it was going to be Tomoyuki Sugano of the Giants, and I said that early on. And when I went to do my voting and I looked at the numbers a little closer, I was surprised at how well Ogawa did, because a lot of people were saying, well, Ogawa, in fact, I remember you saying it on the show, Ogawa's won some games because the team has scored runs behind him, but it wasn't all them scoring runs. He pitched really well for a little guy. I mean, I saw him on the news. He said he had 19 quality starts, and again on that site that I was talking about earlier, Enjoy Baseball Data, it has him with a 73% of his 26 games were quality starts.
That's 73%. That's 27% lower than Masahiro Tanaka.
Stop it. If you're going to compare
him,
that's a tough comparison. Yeah, so 178 innings, and I understand why a lot of people wanted to give him the award, but he also, I mean, Sugano only won 13 games, but he was third in the league in strikeouts, and he had 155 strikeouts, and, you know, people like the strikeouts, and he was sixth in ERA, and you know, 69% of his games were quality starts, and he had 27 starts, one more start than Ogawa. But even though he had one more start, he threw two fewer innings. So Ogawa had more innings, more wins, and again, he pitched really well. I mean, the ERA, I think, was better. I said, you know what? I wanted to vote for Sugano, but I'm going to have to vote for Ogawa.
Well, you know, I thought pretty much all along it was gonna be, I really actually didn't even consider Sugano much of a candidate the way Ogawa came out of the blocks early in the season.
Mm-hmm.
He had like 6 wins before, you know, you could say, you know,
6
you
wins.
Know, how you do.
What's your name again, son?
like, what's your name? Who's this guy?
Yep.
Anyway, so, but Sugano, yeah, he didn't get wins real early. He didn't sort of get on a roll. But my thinking about him changed because he was easily the Giants' best pitcher.
Mm.
I think this past year.
Definitely. Best starter.
So yeah, best starter. Well, I think let's say he was the most useful pitcher of the bunch. I mean, you could say some other guys are better in their roles, but they're in limited roles.
Mm-hmm.
So, he was the Giants' most valuable pitcher on a pennant winning team that was winning the pennant by a large margin. I think with Ogawa, there's a couple of things that go in their favor, and I'll tell you, I got a glance at the wins above replacement.
Mm-hmm.
There's a threat of death if I ever reveal where I saw them, because they're not publicly available. They're kept under lock and key. Mm. But, I got a glance at them, and they had Sugano much higher rated than Ryan Ogawa. And I think because they don't actually, they're not interested in wins. Oddly enough, because pitchers' wins are so much
it's fickle.
Sort of
it's fickle.
Well, they are fickle. The pitchers, you know, but there's value. But again, there is value in winning. It is important to be, you know, it's how important it is, how much the pitcher can shape that is probably fairly small. But you know, we don't know we don't know half of what we think we know.
Yeah.
So I'm all for giving them a little credit for the wins. And if you give them a little credit for the wins, and if you realize that the Swallows' defense was really lousy this year,
mm-hmm.
then you got to play a pitcher, you know, whereas the Giants' defense was quite good, and Sugano benefited from that. And Sugano did not, and also the Swallows gave him a lot of run support. They didn't, I mean, he had teammates who were shut out six times. I think, I don't think he was shut out at all this year, Ryan Ogawa.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those things which don't figure into it, but I think I was looking at it of a balance. The two were pretty even, and my own calculations were not complete by the time I had to fill out my MVP ballot, or in my, you know, we get the MVP and the best nine and the rookie of the years all go out the same day.
The whole nine players, the whole 9 yards. Yeah.
The whole nine or 10 if you have a best nine with 10 players in the Pacific League.
Yep.
They go out the same day. And so I voted for Sugano. And I don't know how many people voted for Sugano. Not a lot.
You know what? I don't have the numbers in front of me. I don't remember, but I was surprised at the numbers too.
Ogawa won 200. There were three pitchers. Central League pitchers got votes. Ogawa won 252. Second place was Sugano with 13.
Mm.
And third place was Fujinami with 8. And I think Fujinami's right there where he should be. I mean, he was really impressive. But it was a tough competition for rookie pitchers this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember actually doing the translation on that story because I didn't get to do a story, but I remember doing the translation and I kind of was remembering the number or looking at the numbers thinking why so many, why such a big difference. But yeah, I was satisfied because I looked at the numbers closely and I thought, yeah, this guy deserves it. So I was fine with it.
Yeah, and just to keep in that vein is who else got votes in the Pacific League? Tatsuya Sato got 4 votes. And
Setup for guy for the Oryx Buffalo.
Yep. Which I have no problems with. He was a very useful player.
He wasn't early, not early on, but then he found himself out there and he got.
Well, he was useful enough early on to be on the All-Star team, which, you know, I thought was kind of weird, but, no, he's okay. I think he's actually going to do better. Shohei Ohtani
mm-hmm.
got 4 votes, and that's probably perfectly good. He's an amazing talent. He didn't have a great season. You know, he didn't have a stellar season, but he was, again, fairly valuable.
Yeah.
Nishino, interesting. Yuji Nishino with Lotte, a development player, brought up. Senga and Nishino were both development players. They both got 1 vote. So,
reliever with SoftBank. Yeah. I was expecting good things from him, and then he faded. I think the season is long, and it shows up with young players.
Well, Senga's a guy who misses bats, so, you know, you got to love that.
Yeah.
So.
All right, interesting enough. Now, last week you weren't on the show. You weren't here to comment on the interview by Don Nomura, so I just wanted to recap with that, and I know you listened to the interview. What were the things that stood out for you in that?
Well, a lot of things. It was riveting. You know, it was really good, and I told you, but I'll tell the listeners, boy, what a good job you did with that interview. Of course, when Don Nomura is motivated, he can also be riveting and captivating, especially he doesn't have somebody like me interrupting him every 30 seconds.
No, that's my job.
Okay, 20 seconds. I was exaggerating. Just trying to give myself more credit than I deserve. Okay, anyway, yeah, really interesting. A couple of points. First of all, I loved your question about whether the posting system was too messed up to even have been implemented in the first place.
Mm.
That's a great question because, you know, it didn't have to be the way it is. You know, it's a trial and error, I think, for all the, you know, it was a reaction to a situation.
Right.
So it was trial and error and it has so many flaws because it's a patchwork. It's like a patch on a machine with moving parts.
Yikes.
You know, it's like trying to fix it while it's in motion. Okay, so Don Nomura's comments were, I thought, very interesting. I think, you know, the idea that, well, first of all, I think a very important point is that the Major League Collective Bargaining Agreement is not up for renewal until 2016.
Mm.
So we're not going to see any significant shifts in the dynamic that works from the major league side mm-hmm. on the luxury tax,
right.
which is the big problem on the major league side. Okay. And that, I'm glad that he brought that up. I also very much liked his, I was very interested to hear his idea of having a 6 year, you know, a year, an option year in which a player can choose to be posted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be 6 years, you know, it could be this or it could be that, but that's a brilliant, brilliant idea. I don't know if I've mentioned my idea for the posting, which actually it wasn't my idea at all. It was, brought up by somebody who preferred for professional reasons not to be mentioned. And if you're listening, you know who you are and thank you for it. But his idea was that it should be just like soccer, where the player reaches an agreement with the team, with a rival team, with another team in another league.
Mm-hmm.
And then once he's got a deal, then the teams sit down and haggle. And if all parties involved, both teams and you know, the purchasing team with the player and the purchasing team with the selling team don't agree, then you don't have a deal. And then, you know, he can go on to another team. You know, no, who says he's got to negotiate with one team? There's so many, because we've got that dynamic of the player has to make a deal with the team and the teams have to make a deal. And then when you add into it that there's only one team to deal with.
Right.
That makes it makes it, nasty. Okay.
I think that's a good idea. I just don't know that, let's say this is an off season. Do you think that, for example, Tanaka could deal with, like, say, 3-4 teams and actually work out a deal before February or March? Because in actuality, if he can't work out a deal, he'd have to be back with the Eagles in February. And that's...
Yeah, that's February 1st, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot sooner than it seems. I mean, it's not far off.
Of course, this year it is. It's impossible this year because they don't have any idea what they're going to do. But I'm saying that is an ideal situation, and there's no reason that would be an ideal option. However, it's not ideal if you're a major league team. Now, in the major league teams, I spoke with Bob Whiting the other night at some length, and he was talking about relating things that his contacts had told him, that a lot of major league teams don't want the posting system at all, and I believe that is true. I think there's probably 18 or 20 major league teams that would be happy to see it disappear.
Well, yeah, look at that posting fee.
Right.
That they have to pay the team. Who wants to pay
well,
that?
Hold on.
No, I know they have to give compensation to the team in Japan, but it wouldn't have to be that high because they're bidding against themselves.
Always bidding against themselves.
But I'm saying if that compensation for the Japanese team doesn't have to be that high, it's only that high because these big market teams are throwing a lot of money on the table to scare the other teams off. And if
it's
only that high
because that's how much they need to win, you know, to get the rights to get the player. That's what we call a free market.
Well, remember they drove the prices up with Darvish and with Matsuzaka just to make
right.
sure that they wanted to overbid the opponents and it wasn't the value
called,
of the player.
That's called a free market. It was the value of the player. If the player didn't have the value, those prices wouldn't have been there. You know, the bidding didn't go like that for Hiroyuki Nakajima.
I'm just saying, hey, look, the value was probably a little bit less, but they overpaid to make sure.
That's the seller's problem, not the buyer's problem.
Well, that's the problem, period.
Not the seller's problem.
But that's the problem, you know, period, because they're overpaying and they don't want to pay that extra money, if they can...
Well, that's not anybody's fault except theirs.
Okay, I'm not saying whose fault it is. I'm just saying they want to pay less. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, they want to fix a system because they can't control themselves.
Well, then that's, they need to go to AA.
That's like, they need to be going to AA. You know, it's like they're going like Chocoholics Anonymous or something. They're like, we should penalize people who don't have to eat chocolate because we eat too much.
Right. Just penalize all the chocolate eaters.
Exactly.
I understand. So I understand.
So I don't get that. I don't get that bit about the free market is too expensive. Well, it's too expensive. You know, it's too expensive for some teams, but this is why the Milwaukee Brewers did not sign Kevin Brown when he became a free agent. This is why the Seattle Mariners didn't sign Barry Bonds. You know, this is why, you know, the reason, you know, San Diego Padres have not been running away with the free agent market because they don't have money. Okay, now, and then, you know, why don't they say, well, free agents don't always work out. The last time they did that, they ended up with a lawsuit. They ended up losing a lawsuit in collusion the last time they said, well, let's work together and lower the... The last time MLB did what it's trying to do to Japan, it ended up with a collusion lawsuit and having to pay the players' union millions and millions of dollars.
Wow, yeah, back in the 80s, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah, back in the 80s, going with, you know, that's where me and Freeman live, you know? So,
well.
So anyway, that whole idea is we are paying too much money, so we need to lower the price that we're paying for somebody else's property.
Yeah.
Now that is called larceny.
Yeah. Again, I said it when I was discussing the show, the interview afterwards, and I said, hey, look, you know, you want to pluck the elite players from Japan, it's going to cost you. I mean,
exactly.
It's not like you can get these guys on the cheap. It doesn't work that way. These are elite players. That's why the market value is what it is. Now, regardless of what you're paying and all this posting fee and the other things, the contract that costs money, the fact that you have to bring them over, you have to get a translator and all this stuff. That's just part of doing business. If you want the guy.
That is.
If you want the guy, crack the wallet open and slam down the cash and let's go.
Exactly. This nonsense about, and then they always drag in this red herring about, we can't trust Japanese players. You know, they're too big a risk. Well, then, you know what the response to, if they're too big a risk, don't bid on them. Mm. You know, what is wrong with you? It's risky. Don't bid. And then complain about it afterwards. And then the teams that don't bid are complaining that it's risky and it's too expensive. No, hey, forget it. Okay. You know, if that was the case, I think your point that pitchers get injured more, Don wasn't biting on that. I heard that and I agree. Pitchers get hurt a lot. That's why we have free agents like Kevin Brown and Barry Zito, who just, you know, wasn't hurt. He just wasn't any good for 3 years.
Mm.
But nobody said, let's stop buying, you know, let's outlaw free agent pitchers because Barry Zito failed. You know, every time they say about,
I like that.
You know, what's the difference between Barry Zito and Kei Gawa for 3 years? Wait, they gave Barry Zito a 6-year contract. That's the difference.
Mm.
Okay.
And they paid him.
Kevin. Yeah, I mean, there's tons of these guys. They're all over the place.
Hey,
but nobody says, let's get rid of free agent pitchers because they're too expensive.
Hideki Inaba really didn't even work out, and they, you know, with the Yankees, and everybody thought he was going to be great.
Sure. A lot of people, you know, this happens all the time.
Mm.
And they say, and, you know, so to say that Japanese pitchers are not reliable, it's like, yeah, wake up, dude. So, yeah, there are issues, and what they want to do is take the fact that Japanese players are not a lock to be quite an easy adjustment to the major leagues as somebody who's played in the major leagues. Well, then what do? You pay less money. I mean, that's what a free market is. And they're saying, well, it's the Japanese team's fault. Let's pay them less. because we can't control ourselves. That's how a free market works. Okay. Now, anyway, enough of that. And getting on to a point. Now, the Nikon Sports the other day had a story in which basically they're trying to set, basically Japan is trying to satisfy three parties. The strong market teams, the weak market teams, the small market teams. They called it the weak market teams here, which I think is interesting. Big market, small market, and the players union. Again, it's not Japan's problem. That is going to be eventually ironed out, some kind of compromise. But one of the potential compromises, I'm thinking, from one of the small market teams is let's limit. I knew this was going to happen sooner or later. Somebody apparently came out and said, let's put a $20 million limit on the maximum posting bid.
Yeah, well, I saw that too.
And I thought they're trying to do to Japan. There are people who are trying to do, and even the idea, the last major league offer, which was to split the difference between the top two bids, lower the amount of money the winning bidding team will have to pay, but without giving the other team any rights, just discounting it, is essentially a step in the direction of saying, we're going to take your players and we're going to give you what we want to give you and shut up. We own you.
Mm.
You are subservient to us. Now, this is what Major League Baseball, this is one of the things Major League Baseball used to do with the money. They set a set fee at which they could draft players out of the minor leagues before they were farm teams. And so the independent teams were, you know, fought this and fought this and fought this because they were trying to make money. They were trying to operate their teams as businesses. But a lot of things happened. But one of the dynamics was the major leagues were just predatory. They didn't want them to operate as businesses. You know, they were competitors.
Yeah.
They were in a decision to put their competitors out of business, essentially. So, this is really a bad trend. And if Japanese baseball should definitely work on that. Okay. Now, that's my last point about the posting system. So.
Yeah. My only thing, my last thought, and I guess it'll be for the podcast too, is on this subject is that, I did a translation the other day, and one of the officials for Japanese baseball said that is the biggest issue they knew before they even stepped in the ring to start doing this boxing match with the posting system, that it was going to be very difficult or extremely difficult to come up with an idea or a plan to satisfy those three parties that you said, the low-budget teams, the big-budget teams, and the MLB Players Association, even without them involved. And when they get involved, it's going to be even more of a mess. And that's what it has been. Hopefully, somebody somewhere will come up with a plan. I saw a list of potential plans, one of them, the one that you mentioned, where there was a limit of $20 million for the bids. And then there were a lot of ideas. And I think there are a lot of ideas out there, but they're all going to be – the one that gets okayed is going to be the one that has the U.S. teams or the major league clubs getting these elite Japanese players for a little bit less than they've been paying.
A discount, right?
Yeah, because that's what they want. And you said predatory. I like that word. I think that's very good because they're out hunting for all the great talent worldwide, and they want to bring it into the major leagues. And I'm fine with it, but just pay the money.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, and it goes back essentially – Major League Baseball has fought tooth and nail to deny baseball players their human rights, to deny them the right to work where they want.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah, I've talked about
starting
this before,
with the draft,
but it's really hard to ignore when the reason they want a posting system is, and the reason they want a draft is to prevent players from having the rights that everybody else have, which is to sell your services on to the highest bidder or to work where you want. And it doesn't fly in major, you know, that whole idea of a free market, you know, oh, we have to pay players what they're worth. Wow. That'll ruin baseball as it has. Free agency has ruined baseball. Boy, it is going to hell in a handbasket. Everything the owners thought was going to ruin baseball has helped baseball.
Yeah.
And everything they thought was going to help baseball like performance enhancing drugs that they were happy to have in the 80s. So I don't have a lot of stock in what Major League Baseball thinks is best for baseball. I don't have much faith in their ability to sort out what is and what isn't best for baseball.
All right, well, all we can do is hope that this thing gets solved in time for Masahiro Tanaka to make his jump to the United States. For you people out there listening, thank you for listening to the end. Please jump on your computers and send us a comment or question. Send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com and make some of them MP3s so that we can let everybody hear your comments. All right, dude, it was good having you back. Thank you very much.
Yes, good to be back, man.
I'm glad you got out all that pent-up frustration and energy after
that. Is that what that was?
I don't know, yeah.
It felt like every week.
All right, so I think we'll see you in 2 weeks, and then after that we will come back in the new year. So enjoy your off-season.
Cheers.